We're already seeing a significant uptick in property prices, specifically in the lower price points. And the reason for that is the higher interest rates do affect borrowing capacity. So we're seeing significant demand in that sub 550, 600K price point, where most properties that we try and compete for on market, which is pretty rare because it tends to be a feeding frenzy, we're seeing 16, 17 offers being put on these properties in a matter of days.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to Dash Dot Insider, the auditory epicenter for passionate property investors seeking a life of freedom, choice, and abundance. Joining me today for a very, very exciting topic is Jason De Silva. Jason, how's it going?
Oh, awesome, Emil. How are you going?
Yeah, good, thanks. Today, our topic is, what are the key factors that are creating upward pressure on the property market? Now, the reason that we decided this would be a really good topic is a lot of people are wondering what's going to happen in 2024. And we have done a few episodes where we have been making predictions. We've been talking about one of the key factors or another of the key factors. Today, we're going to go through a little bit of a checklist. We're going to have a look at all of the key factors that we've identified. There are six of them that we feel are going to create a lot of upward pressure. There's one that's probably not going to do anything, but we need to talk about it anyway. And this is actually going to be part one of a two-part sequence, a two-part series of episodes, because in the second one, we're going to talk about some of the factors that might actually temper the rise in property prices that we're expecting, some of the factors that might create some downward pressure. So that's going to be in part two. Part two, we're going to talk about some of the downward pressures that might come into play, and we're going to talk about how we might see portfolios changing a little bit in the second half of 2024 in terms of how to set you up optimally. But first up, today's episode, we have six really important factors that are creating, or that we anticipate, are going to create massive upward pressure on the property market. The first one is a lack of building approvals. So Jason, what do you have for us?
Yeah, so we have a really interesting stat here. So the total approvals for the year, according to a NAB research report, has said that we've got 162,200 building approvals in place, which is the lowest that it's been since March 2013. So pretty interesting stuff there. We're seeing a significant drop in building approvals, and we're also seeing on top of that a lot of big builders going bust, which is going to affect that number as well quite significantly.
Okay, that was for 2022 2023, 162,000. So at the moment, would you say this could be one of the factors that is creating a little bit of a property affordability or a rental affordability crisis? Would we call it a crisis at this stage?
Yeah, definitely, because we've seen here, like, the population's grown significantly over that time, naturally, not including some of the other things we're going to be talking about. And the supply of new dwellings is not meeting that. It's actually not meeting that quite significantly, which is going to create upward pressure for homeowners and property affordability, but also rental properties as well. So definitely a big factor here.
Okay. Could it be that 2022-2023 was just an anomaly, and in 2024 it's going to pick up and we're going to be looking good and we're going to build enough houses?
I'm not feeling too confident about that, just because there are a lot of other material factors that are affecting this as well. So we've got the rising interest rates that are affecting things. We've got the material shortage with COVID. It's still lagging, which is delaying a lot of projects and a lot of SLAs from builders coming through. We're also seeing here that the further home construction is going to decrease to 95,000 in 2024, which is the lowest that it's been since 2012. So we're going to see a drop, actually. So further from last year, it's going to be even worse this year, dropping to 95,400. It's pretty crazy.
That does not sound good. Well, it sounds good for property investors. If you're a property investor, this sounds pretty good, because you have a scarce asset in a property, and that is going to become, in terms of supply and demand, even scarcer. Let me check that I've got those numbers right, because they sound crazy. We have building approvals for 2022-2023 at the lowest level since 2013 at 162,000, and that has at least in part contributed to a cost of living crisis, cost of property, cost of rental. And we're looking at going down in 2024, down to 95,000. So that's a drop of like 67,000, something like that. So 60,000, that's a drop of like 60% drop in the number of approvals. Okay, so that sounds like a pretty major problem. We already have a crisis caused by only building 162,000, and it's going to go down to 95,000. That's what's predicted at the moment. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's right. And this is falling short of the government target to build 1.2 million new dwellings. So they've got a five-year target to build 1.2 million dwellings. And we've seen this year projected to build 95,000 and the year before 162,200. So a pretty significant decrease there as well, which is pretty wild.
Okay. Well, I think that adequately covers, well, rather inadequately covers the supply side of the equation. The other side, of course, is demand. And one of the factors that can affect demand is immigration. Now, I know personally that I've had conversations with a lot of people about property, and people often immigration pops up as a topic. And in those conversations, it's sort of like 200,000, 400,000, five. Some people are a little bit wild. They say, you know, it's 500,000 new migrants moving to Australia. What is the real number?
The real number. So in the 2022-2023 financial year, we saw an increase of new migrant arrivals rising to 737,000, up from 427,000 the previous year. So that's a 73% increase year on year.
That's 737,000.
Yes.
That's nearly 250,000 new migrants to Australia.
And we're forecasting to build 95,000 houses for them in 2024.
Okay. I'd like to run some basic mathematics by you, if I may. There was a report that came out talking about home sizes and the number of people per dwelling. And back in 1980, it was about 2.9. Through the 2000s, it was going down to the sort of 2.5 area. Now we're at roughly 2.1 because dwellings or the number of people per dwelling just seems to be going down. People are waiting a little bit longer until they have children. People are a little bit more independent, a little bit earlier. There are a bunch of different people having fewer children, I think, is probably the main one. But if we have a look at, if we take the 1980 number and let's say we round 2.9 up to 3, and so we have 3 people per dwelling, even at 250,000 new migrants, there would be 250,000 new dwellings that we need. And you said that we're building, we've got approvals for about 95. So we're about 145,000 dwellings short. A couple of questions running through my head. One, where are they going to live? Is there a plan for that? And two, what do you see this doing to the property market?
This is going to be really interesting. I don't believe we have a firm plan on how we're going to house these migrants, which is essentially moving them. They're going to have to compete in the normal housing market. What we've traditionally seen with immigrants is when they move to a new country, they tend to rent for a few years, or usually it's about 1 to 2 years, just because they're still getting familiarity with the area. They still want to make sure they're going to make the right move. And also lending can be quite difficult when you first move to Australia without having the appropriate residential things in place as well. So what tends to happen is that when new migrants move in, we tend to see upward pressure on the rental market due to those new migrants seeking housing. And that drives rental prices up in the short term. And once those migrants have found that place they want to live and they've found the job and they're well settled and they've identified what area they want to live in, they will then move and buy, which will affect the property prices as well. So now we have a new segment of the market pushing upward pressure on property prices as well.
So the most basic economic equation that everyone gets taught is supply and demand. And what we're hearing from you today is that we have basically a record low in supply for as a proportion of the population that we have at the moment, right? It's the lowest raw number since 2012, which sounds like it was a very, very low year in terms of building approval. So we're at the lowest there, and we're at probably the absolute highest, 750,000 new migrants into the country. Inevitably, we're going to have I can't imagine that not being a really big upswing in the property market. Like, this feels like 2024, 2025 could be, just on these two factors alone. We've got another four factors we're going to talk about, But just on these two factors alone, 2024, 2025 could be the biggest years that we've ever seen in property, certainly in my lifetime. That's kind of my
experience. Really interesting, right? Yeah, because the Australian government has, like, at the moment, we have a significant skill shortage and unemployment issue, which is why a lot of these migrants are moving to Australia. So we are trying to resolve one issue. But as a result, we're creating a separate issue in the housing market, because we're creating upward pressure and more people moving in that will need housing for when they are looking to rent initially and then obviously buy as well. So there's a lot of competing priorities which are creating multiple different nuanced effects for the governments here.
Right. Okay, that makes perfect sense. Yes. They won't be the first government to try to solve one problem by creating a much bigger one, but I'm not going to get political because I'm actually originally from New Zealand, so I'm not really fully across the Australian political landscape, but all I can say is, yep, that sounds pretty typical for a government in pretty much any Western country. Let's solve a small problem with a really big one. All right, the third factor that we want to talk about today, and I think this one is pretty important. I've got some data, well, not data, I'll say predictions from some very important people on interest rates. First up, a little bit of a caveat on interest rates, and that is we have our AI model. Now, I'd like to make a distinction here between our AI model that we use for predicting growth and cash flow in different suburbs around Australia, and what most people these days think of as AI, which is ChatGPT and all of the apps and very, very similar things. Our AI model is completely different. It's created from the ground up. It's not a modification of an app or something like that. It's all written and coded by the Dash.Tech team, who are phenomenal. They've been working on this for years. We've invested about $5 million into creating the tech that produces the results that we're able to produce, where we're outperforming the general market by double-digit figures. One of the factors that gets analyzed when we're trying to see, like, which areas are going to go up and which ones aren't, is interest rates. It turns out that interest rates have very, very little correlation with property prices. But when you look a little bit deeper, you can see the reason for that. And that is that when interest rates are very low, property prices tend to go up. When interest rates are relatively high, property prices tend to go up as well. And so there's no correlation. And the reason that property prices tend to go up when interest rates are high is kind of what we're seeing now. Interest rates are high, so builders are going out of business. And so then we have less supply, so the property prices go up. When we're in this kind of middle ground where things are kind of comfortable in terms of the interest rates, the government doesn't need tons of money and things like that, that's when we see property prices not kind of moving as significantly or even dramatically as they are at the moment. So that's why there's no kind of direct correlation between interest rates and property prices. But you do see strong price increases when interest rates are very low and strong increases when interest rates are very high. With all of that background information, I'm going to tell you what we've been hearing from the Commonwealth Bank. What I have here is that the Commonwealth Bank is anticipating a substantial interest rate decline of nearly 1 percentage point by the second half of 2024. They're talking about starting in September of this year. So when they say the second half of 2024, they're talking about the 2024-2025 financial year, I presume. So they're looking at things starting in September, bringing and then continuing in the second half of that fiscal year, bringing rates down to 3.6%. Now, their chief economist, Stephen Holmarek, he reckons that we're going to see a further 75 basis point drop in 2025. And that's going to bring the cash rate down to about 2.85%. So we're looking at about 1.75% is what they are predicting. How do you see that affecting the property market and prices as we see them at the moment?
Yeah, it's a really good question. As it currently stands, we're already seeing a significant uptick in property prices, specifically in the lower price points. And the reason for that is the higher interest rates do affect borrowing capacity. So we're seeing significant demand in that sub 550, 600K price point, where most properties that we try and compete for on market, which is pretty rare, because it tends to be a feeding frenzy. We're seeing 16, 17 offers being put on these properties in a matter of days. So we had a property that we tried to buy for a client, just to use an example. The property was advertised at offers over 460. It was a property in a really good area, but it needed about a $30,000 to $40,000 renovation to bring it up to scratch. That property sold for $610,000, I believe, in a matter of 2 weeks. And we were one of 17 offers placed to buy that property. So in that specifically lower price point, we're already seeing such a significant uptick in demand coming through. And once interest rates drop, that's only going to allow people to borrow more money, which is going to exacerbate the issue further. So it's adding fuel to the fire, in my opinion.
So we have a lack of building approvals, we have record immigration, and at the same time, it looks like interest rates are going to come down, thereby making it easier to pay more for properties again.
Yeah, exactly right.
Great time to own property. That's all I can really say about that. All right. The fourth factor that we have today is inflation. Now, as I said on this podcast before, if you're a regular listener, you've probably heard me mention that my personal barometer for trying to determine whether or not property prices are going to go up or down or stay the same or do whatever is how much does the government need money? And when the government needs money, the mechanism that they use is, well, the ways that they can get money is printing cash through quantitative easing. I don't think the government's going to do that. Raising taxes, but the government has just announced tax cuts that are coming. We're going to talk about those a little bit later. Or through bank lending. And when the banks lend the money, the government can then issue bonds, and then the banks can buy the bonds. And that's how money gets added to the system, and that becomes inflationary because we've got more money, but the same amount of goods, you know. We're told that it's supposed to match productivity, but in reality, we keep on seeing the property prices go up and up and up. And right now, we're in a situation where the government definitely needs a lot of money, especially since they've introduced tax cuts. So I see them relaxing lending criteria quite a bit. I see them allowing banks to write more loans so that they can get money. And as they're doing that, I see it being, I see that being very inflationary. That's my personal take on that, which leads us into the fifth criteria that we have today, which is lending criteria. It is getting a lot easier. And we had Callum Rhodes on the podcast a short while ago. Great episode. He's a super smart, really, really impressive mortgage broker. He told us that some of the major lenders are now lending 97% LVRs. So 97% of an investment property you're borrowing on. That feels like it's absolutely huge. But what's your sort of take on, is that something that may well affect the market? Or what's your take on that, Jason?
100%. So one of the biggest barriers to entering property, we've spoken about this a few times, is the deposit, the initial capital required. We've seen a lot of stats where it can take 3, 4, 5, 6 years sometimes to save that deposit. Having a higher LVR means you can use more of the bank's money, less of yours, which if you're buying a $500,000 property, as an example, and you can borrow up to 97% LVR, you only need to contribute 3% of the purchase price, plus cover the stamp duty and some of the additional costs, and you're in a property really easily. So having that 97% LVR allows more investors and owner-occupiers. We've also got a lot of banks offering 95% LVRs, no lender's mortgage insurance. So owner-occupiers want to buy their first home. So this affects not only investors, but also owner-occupiers as well, which tend to cover most of the property market. Investors actually make a very small portion. So this is allowing both investors and owner-occupiers, everyone that wants to participate in the property market, easier access to be able to do so, which is going to create upward pressure. And it will also allow people to pay more. A lot of the banks have also reduced some of their other policies around this. So, for example, most banks use a 3% buffer rate on top of that interest rate for servicing. A lot of banks have now created policies where they'll look at 2%, 1% reduction in that 3% buffer, just going to allow people to borrow more. So they're going to allow people to borrow more, contribute less of their own money towards the deal as well, which is, again, going to put upward pressure because now there are more people that can participate in the property market.
Right. Okay. Tell me about that. The 3% to the 2% buffer. How does that sort of work in detail?
Yeah. So when banks assess your serviceability, they assess it against a interest rate buffer. That interest rate is broken up into what interest rate you're going to pay on that loan, plus a buffer rate, which is 3%. That is the rule implemented by the government. But a lot of banks have implemented new policies now where they will consider 2%, 1%, sometimes even no buffer when assessing those loans, which means now you can borrow more because the interest and borrowing expense has been reduced quite significantly. So it's going to allow people to be able to borrow more money towards either buying an investment property or also buying an occupied home as well.
Do we know how the government feels about this move by the banks?
It's kind of strange, right? Because that rule is still in place. A lot of banks have just built their own side policies to kind of combat it. So it just goes to show that despite the regulatory obligations coming through from the higher ups, that banks are still able to work through them, which is quite interesting.
That feels pretty weird. I would think that if the government really wanted to be strict about it, they could be. They would have the legislation in place to be able to crack down on banks and say, "Oi, stop doing that." If they wanted the banks to stop.
Yeah, it's really strange. Like, we were having a conversation with one of our accounting partners a few weeks ago, and he said the banks are looking at, the regulatory bodies are looking at putting in place a debt-to-income ratio buffer as well. So at the moment, lenders can set their own debt-to-income ratio buffer. So most big lenders, it's about 6%. So you can borrow six times your salary, but there are some lenders that will do 7-8%, and the RBA, I believe it's the RBA, are looking at bringing that down to six across the board and having a mandatory rule for all lenders to be able to borrow and use these algorithms when calculating borrowing capacity. But you've also got a lot of non-bank lenders that sit outside these requirements that can pretty much do whatever they want. So regardless of these requirements coming in place, there's always a way forward to be able to get additional lending if you have the capacity.
All right. Well, this is quite a conflation of factors that we're looking at the moment. We have, just to do a sort of mid-episode recap, we have building approvals at record lows. We have immigration at record highs. So the supply demand is way out of whack, creating a lot of upward pressure. At the same time as that, CBA are telling us that they think the government are going to reduce their interest rates. And at the same time as that, the government regulations and the bank's internal policies are relaxing criteria, allowing people to borrow more. That inevitably causes inflation. And so all of these factors just seem to be pointing in one direction and one direction only. And that is for property prices really to pop. Now, I've been in property for quite a while. I can't help but feel that 2024, 2025 feels like it's going to be a record year. These are going to be two record years. 2024, 2025 financial year feels like it's going to be a record year for property growth in Australia. It does seem like we have this perfect storm brewing. I can't see a way out of it. Like, it's great if you're a property investor. Might not be so great for society. So I feel like the gap between rich and poor is getting wider. And I don't, sort of from a personal perspective, I don't like that. I say rich and poor, it feels like it's property owners and non-property owners. If you own property, you're sort of getting locked into that. So we have all of this upward pressure. What about the rental market? How, this is our sixth factor that we have listed out here, and that is to talk about the rental vacancy rates. What are we kind of seeing on that front?
Yeah, so this is quite interesting. And just to give some context on this, a stable rental market is considered to have a vacancy rate of anywhere from 3-5%. And that's considered to have a stable market where if there are properties that are going to be rented, there is sufficient demand to meet that supply. At the moment, across the board, we've got extremely low vacancy rates across the entire country. So we've got some stats here that the vacancy rate across Australia-wide is sitting at 1.07%. And in some states, so Brisbane, Adelaide, and Perth specifically, have vacancy rates below 1%, which is considered an extremely tight and stressed rental market. So this is just broad scope, macro. On the ground, we're seeing ridiculous, like a lot of the areas that we buy in for clients have vacancy rates of 0.3, 0.2, which is pretty much zero. And a lot of these areas, if you have a look and see what properties are available for rent, there's one or two, and sometimes there's none. So significant demand, again, it's the same effect, significant demand and not enough supply to meet it.
Okay. A vacancy rate, the calculation of a vacancy rate is essentially how many properties are available for rent within a particular suburb as a percentage, right?
Correct.
So correct. A vacancy rate of 3% means that for every 1,000, for every 100 properties, there are 3 vacant. For every 1,000 properties, there are 30, and that's stable. And we're in a position now where out of every 1,000, we're at like 2.
Correct.
2 or 3.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. And this is why I hear anecdotes of people going along to rental inspections. It's just being tons and tons of people there. Like, you just go back 5, 6, 7 years, you'd go to inspection, there might be 3 or 4 groups that might go through. If it's a popular area, what are we kind of seeing now?
It's pretty crazy. Like, I spoke to my property manager just to get a gauge on how the market was going. And she said every open for inspection that she does in this suburb gets upwards of 15 to 20 groups through and applications straight away. I think their days on market was sitting at below 7 for them to rent out a property. So 7 days from when they advertise a property for rent, it's getting tenanted pretty much immediately. So this is just one area in WA, but we're seeing it in Queensland and some of the South Australian locations that we're buying in and across the entire country based on these vacancy rates. So it's pretty crazy, and it's gotten to a pretty ridiculous point in some areas. Like, I read an interesting article where it was in regional Queensland. A lot of people are unable to find housing, so they're just living in caravan parks or living in their cars because there's just literally, they're trying to find rental accommodation and they're just unable to do so. So it's causing quite significant second and third order consequences for general social welfare, but also for the property market as well.
Right. Okay. Well, I think this is an important factor, because one of the things as property investors that people look for is, well, I need to have a tenant, and I'm going to be able to find a tenant. And the answer is, you're going to be able to find a tenant, but it sort of goes beyond that, because suddenly you have a really good pool of tenants to choose from, and you can choose the one that you determine to be the highest quality. It might be the people that look like they're going to look after the place best. It might be the people that are going to pay the most. It does seem like property investors are going to be absolutely spoiled for choice when it comes to making sure that their properties are tenanted and that it's going to derive the income and therefore the cash flow that they need in order to make sure that their property portfolio is really solid. I know that's something a lot of property investors think about, like, who's going to live there? Are they going to burn the place down? Are they going to start manufacturing drugs? Are they going to start trying to sell parts of the house for you know, whatever? that might be more of a New Zealand problem than an Aussie problem. But now that basically, that whole fear, that whole anxiety basically disappears, because even a half decent property manager is going to be able to find you someone who's going to look after the property properly. So I think that should give people a lot of confidence. If it is something that's in the back of your mind, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, yeah, but what about the tenants? It's like, right now you are spoiled for choice.
100 Yeah, you're definitely spoiled for choice. And this is quite interesting too, right? Because we do buy some properties that already have tenants in them. And those tenants are on a fixed lease, on a 12-month lease, and they could be 4 or 5 months into that lease. We're seeing that when we buy the property, the rent that's been appraised for that property is significantly more than what that property is even rented for at the moment. Like, we had an example where we're trying to buy a property, and it was a duplex of 2 units, and the property was on a fixed lease at $250 per week, 6 months into that tenancy, and the property manager that we were looking at doing our due diligence with has already appraised that property at $300 per week. So it's already, the rental is already more than what the tenants have been fixed into a lease for. That's how quickly the rents are increasing. And the only reason we're not seeing this data straight away is because leases are on a fixed term or a 12-month term, but the rents are moving during that 12-month time at a pretty rapid rate.
Okay. All right. Well, the last thing that we need to talk about today is the tax treatment. Now, this is the 7th factor, and as I mentioned at the top of this episode, this is not really a factor that we see having a major effect. Now, to give everyone the background on this, the Albanese government did come in on the promise of a whole lot of tax cuts. And basically, they were going to get rid of the $80,000 to $200,000 tax bracket. It turns out that they're not really going to do that. And they've shifted some of the margins around a little bit. And so the people who are going to benefit are the people earning between, say, $120,000 and $135,000. There's been some movement around there. And they might save a little bit of cash on their tax. Why this is important is basically because a lot of people have been talking about it and wondering, you know, what's going to happen and how it will affect the property market. Under the proposed tax cuts that they originally had, it was quite feasible for some people in that tax bracket, in between the $80,000 to $200,000 mark, there were some calculations where people could end up increasing their borrowing capacity by up to $57,000, right? These are calculations that were given. And human nature, when it comes to property investing, a lot of people want to borrow to the maximum of their borrowing capacity. It's not always a good idea, right? You should get proper advice on that. But a lot of people, that tends to be the trend. It's like, how much can I borrow? How much can I borrow? They want to get the biggest thing that they can. And these tax cuts, we're going to allow them to borrow more. And so a lot of people are thinking, oh, that's going to be fantastic. But it turns out that there has been a massive backflip on those tax cuts now. And I can't really see them having any impact on borrowing capacity. I can't really see them changing anything in the market at all. And the reason for that is the backflip that the Albanese government has done on those tax cuts, which isn't getting a lot of press. A lot of people may have heard that, oh, yeah, these tax cuts coming, it's going to be great, blah, blah, blah. And they've basically kind of been wiped out. So if you are thinking that that's something that's going to give you an extra push, it might. We're just not really seeing it at this end. Which kind of leads us to wrapping up on what the six factors that are going to have a difference, well, we are predicting are going to have a massive difference. We've looked at the lack of building approvals, and I've probably said it three times already in this episode, but we're at record lows, and the 2024 year is looking really bad. We're like under 100,000 properties being built. Like that to me sounds like, if you think it's a crisis at the moment, wait for another year, and then you'll see what housing, like, how much of a supply issue we have. We have record levels of immigration at the same time. At the same time as that, you can sort of see that the government are trying to get the messaging out a little bit that interest rates are going to come down. So housing affordability will become easier. More people will be able to enter the market. Prices will go up again. We have lending criteria that seems to be relaxing everywhere. So we've got interest rates coming down, allowing people to borrow more. We've got relaxed lending criteria, allowing people to borrow even more. We've got the immigration, we've got the supply-demand issue. All of these things feel like it is a perfect storm that's going to create an enormous amount of wealth for people who've managed to be in property investment. Jason, any final thoughts?
I completely agree with pretty much everything we've said in your summary, Emil. It's pretty much creating a recipe for a very interesting property market. And yeah, I'm very excited to see how this plays out over the next 6 months and over the next year as well. It sounds like there's a lot of upward pressures being placed on demand side factors, with having the immigration, having the lower interest rates, the tax cuts. If they had done what they originally intended, that would have supercharged it even further as well. So maybe that would have been an interesting scenario to explore too. But regardless, we're on a really interesting trajectory, and it's going to be awesome to see property investors. Becomes really much more important to look at whether it's a good opportunity to get into the property market, because all signs point towards it being a really successful year for investors.
Well, before we get too kind of super excited about what the property market is going to do for everyone's portfolio over the course of this year, do remember to tune in a week from now. We are going to be talking about downward pressures. We've got a couple of factors that could create some downward pressure on the property market, because we want to have a balanced view. As much as we all love property, we want to make sure that we are sort of steel manning our position and sort of pressure testing it against the opposing point of view. What are the things that could really wreck the property market? We've got a few topics in there. The rise of crypto is one of them. The cost of living crisis, could it slow things down? We're going to talk about all those kinds of things in part two of this little series that I'm doing with Jason. In the meantime, thank you everyone for joining us. Hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we hope to see you on the next one.